Coming up on Tech News Today, will BlackBerry's big bet pay off? Also, Netflix wants to beat HBO to being itself. We'll explain. Also, Microsoft's got a couple of different storage problems. All that more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone and get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit RingCentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Big day for RIM, or what used to be RIM, announcing several new things this morning, including a change of name. The company will now be called BlackBerry. Thorsten Hines took the stage in New York, showed off the new BlackBerry Z10, as he called it, the Z10, and the Q10, both running BlackBerry OS 10. The Z10 is a touchscreen available Thursday, January 31st in the UK, February 5th in Canada, February 10th in the Arab Emirates, and March in the United States. Phone will be $150 on a three-year contract in Canada and somewhere around $200 set by the carriers in the United States. The Q10, the one with the keyboard, a physical keyboard, but not much else was announced about it, should be coming sometime in April. Also, musician Alicia Keys was named Global Creative Director at BlackBerry.
Nintendo's cutting sales forecasts by 27% for its new Wii U console and now predicts sales of just 4 million Wii Us in the year through March due to weaker demand than hoped for the console. The company still expects annual profit to rise, though, to 14 billion yen. That's about 154 million U.S. dollars, thanks to a weaker yen, but also expects an overall operating loss of 20 billion yen for the year. Previously, it had foreseen a 20 billion yen operating profit.
Judge Lucy Koh says Samsung did not willfully infringe on Apple's patents. That means that Apple cannot collect triple damages. If you somehow forgot, a jury awarded Apple over $1 billion in damages for patent infringement. Judge Koh also rejected Samsung's request for a new trial.
Michael Dell may contribute up to $1 billion of his own dollars to buy out the company Dell and take it private, according to Bloomberg. Investment firm Silver Lake Management is leading the buyout effort. Microsoft is also rumored to be considering contributing funding as well.
Amazon's fourth quarter is a bit of a head-scratcher. The company posted turnover of $21.27 billion, which is a 22% increase, but a net profit of $97 million. That's down 45% from the same time last year. CEO Jeff Bezos says this is due to shifting reader habits in people. Kindle downloads are rising, but paper book sales grew just 5% in December. That's the lowest in Amazon's history. The company also expects its operating income to lie somewhere between $285 million loss and a $65 million profit.
That's quite the window there. It's like we could lose everything or make a ton of money. Okay. Who says the PC business is dead? Well, Lenovo reported its third fiscal quarter with a profit of about $205 million. That's more than 30% greater than its profit last year at the same time. Lenovo shipped 14.1 million PCs and now has nearly 16% of the worldwide PC market. Lenovo also shipped 9.4 million phones.
Game console makers aren't going to get the big bucks from China anytime soon, it looks like. TechInAsia.com says the Dongfang Daily reported China's Ministry of Culture says they've never researched canceling the game console sales ban, as previously reported by China Daily. Granted, government bureaucrats in all countries often state one thing and then do another, but it does throw some cold water on the notion.
EA had held a closed beta to do some last-minute bug testing on the new SimCity and had threatened to ban users from all e-games if they failed to report a bug. Okay. Well, a Reddit user that had pointed out, somewhat helpfully, some flaws in SimCity's online-only DRM found himself banned from the service. That didn't sit well with the Reddit community, as you can imagine. However, EA's representatives now say this ban was just a glitch in their system that banned several members who had opted out of receiving email from EA. Move along. Nothing to see here.
It's just the system that's punishing honest people messing up again. Not a big deal. Google Giving, which is Google's philanthropic arm, awarded a grant to the UK's Raspberry Pi Foundation to provide 15,000 of the small computers to UK school children. TechCrunch reports the grant is worth $1 million, covering 15,000 Raspberry Pi Model Bs, as well as teaching materials and support to help people teach code to kids.
A Microsoft spokesperson tells The Verge that the 64-gigabyte Surface Pro will have 23 gigabytes of free space for the user. 41 gigabytes of space is reserved for Windows 8, built-in apps, and a recovery partition. The 128-gigabyte model will have 83 gigabytes free.
Gigabytes may appear smaller in this window. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Believe me, right now I am building up a nice little pile of things I'll be putting on Gazelle. Great way to get rid of last year's gadgets, get some money out of them without the hassle. Did you get a new phone? Get a new Samsung Galaxy S or an iPhone for the holidays? Maybe you got a new iPad or a new MacBook. Before you give those away or bury them in a drawer, find out what your old stuff is worth at gazelle.com. The extra cash you can get is a gift you can give yourself. And you don't have to be like, oh, I don't want to go through the hassle of trying to sell this stuff. I'll just donate. It's easy. Go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPads and iPhones. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. You lock that in for 30 days, so you have time to think about it and procrastinate if you're like me. And then once you do send it to them, free shipping. They'll give you a box in a lot of cases. You get paid fast by check or PayPal. Gazelle has paid $50 million to over 500,000 customers. It's trustworthy and it's easy. Go check out your Samsung Galaxy S2, your iPad 2, your iPhone 4S. Find out what you can get for it. That and all kinds of other gadgets at gazelle.com. Sell your last year's gadgets today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, we're happy to have back on the show Julio Ojeda Zapata, tech writer for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. How's it going, Julio?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us again. Let's get right into the BlackBerry talk. I trained myself for years to say RIM when I was talking about the company that made BlackBerry. Now I can untrain myself, I guess. RIM changed its name to BlackBerry, but the two big devices that it announced were the Z10, which is a touchscreen 4.2-inch, 356 PPI, textured surface. That's the one they made the biggest deal about. They also showed off the Q10, which has a physical keyboard. BlackBerry, well-known for physical keyboards. Iaz and I were up early today covering this for Twit Live specials. They went through BlackBerry OS 10. We've seen a lot of what they showed off before. A couple of things that stuck out to me. BlackBerry Flow, which is multitasking. They've had that on the playbook for a while, but they've really made it work well on the smaller phone screens. BlackBerry Balance allows you to swipe between personal and work profiles. And as I mentioned in the news fuse, these things are going to be $150, $200, depending on what carrier you're getting them with. It's February and March for the Z10. April is the rumor for the Q10. Stuck out to you, now that you've had a little distance from the end of the announcement, what's still in your head? What's your impression of BlackBerry's announcement?
Well, I guess for the software itself, BlackBerry 10, we've seen a lot of it. The newest thing that we saw was BlackBerry messaging video calling, and the demo had a screen share function that I thought was pretty killer when it comes to productivity. When you were showing off spreadsheets or showing off anything on your phone, that's what they showed on the BlackBerry device. That you could see the home screens, or you can go into applications and share all of that. I thought that was quite impressive for a built-in app. Also, that StoryMaker application, which is a bit like an iMovie-style editor, I thought that was pretty interesting. The hardware didn't really seem to stand out to me. The name change, I guess that's helpful, so we don't have to keep remembering the whole RIM thing, but it seemed pretty unspectacular.
This is BlackBerry's big attempt to get back into the game. They've had declining market share. They need to turn that around. Thorsten Hines made a big deal about how they've been taking time to get this right. Julio, hearing all these specs, seeing all this information, is it swaying you any?
Well, I think BlackBerry, I think it's playing the long game. I don't think right out of the gate it's going to resurrect itself. I think it needs to get something out there that's credible, and then it needs to sort of pick away at it. I think of Apple when it first released the iMac. The iMac didn't save the company. It took a decade to save the company. But this is a solid first step, and I think BlackBerry projected a lot of confidence. I think it really injected some enthusiasm into the BlackBerry masses. Like we say here in Minnesota, the CEO turned the frown the other way around.
Turn that frown upside down. I think you're right. I mean, they may not have come up with the big splashy thing that I think they need to really capture people's attention and make people say, well, wait, maybe I don't want an Android phone. Maybe I don't want an iPhone. Maybe I want a BlackBerry again. But they did a lot of things to make BlackBerry fans happy. And even people who may have recently, a whole thing with Alicia Keys, she talked about how she had left BlackBerry for a while and now she'd come back. I think this may turn some people back to BlackBerry. One of the things, though, is apps. They made a big deal about how they have all the big apps, but there's some notable exceptions. The Facebook app is made by RIM's project. It's not made by Facebook. There's not a YouTube app in there. There's not an Instagram app. Sarah, how important is that?
Well, it's very important if you're thinking of switching operating systems and there are certain apps that you just equate with using your phone, your handset on a regular basis. You know, I think the whole Alicia Keys story about how she's been swayed back to BlackBerry because it's so much better. I mean, this is like Lady Gaga being the Polaroid creative director, right? I mean, I don't think it means anything. It's just putting a famous face, you know, on a brand to try to get some attention, although she is really famous. I think it's extremely smart for RIM to dump the name RIM because that's what RIM is like. That's the parent company of the BlackBerry. It just makes sense. I think that's it's the best move I've heard in quite a while. I do think that integrated apps, I know Foursquare is integrated on these handsets. That's very interesting to me. It's probably a deal that makes both of those companies pretty happy. And Evernote and some of that stuff is kind of great, especially if you get a new BlackBerry and that's just part of the operating system. Although it's technically a standalone app, you might get used to it and associate the app with BlackBerry if you haven't used it before. But yeah, I mean, they will have to ramp up. They've got to have things like, a native Facebook app eventually, because it's also the perception, right, that other companies believe in BlackBerry 10. And right now it seems like they're getting a lot of attention, but not necessarily all good attention. It's sort of people are cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, and I think that's better than where they've been.
Totally.
Before Thorsten Hines took over. They did a good job of emphasizing that BlackBerry is now better than ever for productivity, for people who are serious about business. That's something that Samsung has tried to spin as a negative. Like, oh, I have to have two phones. Well, now they have BlackBerry Balance, which says, hey, you can have your personal stuff and your work stuff on the same phone and easily swap between them. Not the first platform to do that, but they have a very compelling way of doing that. They showed off a lot of great productivity stuff like you were talking, Iaz, with BlackBerry Balance. I mean, I think they have done an effective first step, like Julio said. Round the horn, last thought on this before we move on. Start with you, Julio. How much good or bad do you think this is going to do for BlackBerry in the next, say, 3 to 6 months?
Well, I'm an iPhone user, but I'm always taking a look at Android phones because I'm kind of a Google head. I like Google services, so I'm always taking a look at that because I'm very interested. Likewise, there's a very significant installed base of BlackBerry users, and they want an excuse to stick around. And I think that they've been given one. I don't think I necessarily expected to see anything revolutionary today, but it's a solid first step that will make BlackBerry loyalists happy and will prevent the migration away from the company that has been sort of sapping it.
Iaz, what do you think?
I think that anybody who wanted to buy a BlackBerry and was waiting because the old operating system was a dead end, they're going to be quite happy with this. But the fact that this device doesn't come out in the United States until mid-March or so, even though it's on all four carriers, the major carriers, I think that was a big win for BlackBerry. I think that delay plus the whole Mobile World Congress happening in February, I think that's going to take a huge hit when it comes to BlackBerry. They're not going to be able to handle seeing all these new hot phones come out in February. I don't know if their timing is good on this. I think it's a solid phone. I think it'll help them out long term. But I think in the short term, they're going to struggle a bit.
So pretty, somewhat positive, somewhat negative. What do you think, Sarah?
I think, just to try to look at what Aya said from the other perspective, you know, maybe after Mobile World Congress, because BlackBerry's, you know, it will sort of be bringing up the rear, people will feel phone fatigue. You know, there'll be so much stuff that has come out, and maybe it will work to their advantage that in March this will all calm down a little bit, and then there are BlackBerry phones that people might be interested in if for whatever reason they didn't hear about or find their magic phone coming out of the show in Barcelona. I don't know. I do feel like this all sounds fine. You know, there's nothing really wrong with anything that BlackBerry's announced, but yeah, it's like, well, you know, we're getting into February and there's still going to be some time, and people have a lot of opportunities to get excited about other things.
I think looking at the reviews, that the battery life is probably going to be the biggest concern that people have. The Verge review, for instance, said it didn't always make it through the day without running out of charge. It is easy to swap batteries, and they even have a charger that can charge your phone and an extra battery at the same time. But I think this stems the tide for BlackBerry, but I don't know that it turns the tide yet. It's not necessarily
a bad thing. I think it was Clayton Morris who was following along the announcement, as you guys were, who was saying, I'm watching the battery on the phone that they're using as an example, like, deplete fairly rapidly.
Yeah,
that's,
we were talking about that.
Good, you know.
Yeah, it was down to 25% halfway through the presentation. All right, let's move on to Netflix, who wants to become HBO before HBO becomes them.
Yeah, there was a big profile on Netflix at GQ, and the major things that are getting pulled out of this is Netflix Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos. He was giving some quotes. He talked about his $300 million budget for original programming. They talked about how Netflix doesn't require TV pilots. You order pretty much the entire series. When Netflix gets a show, they order a season up front. And the most notable quote is this quote from Sarandos, who says, "The goal is to become HBO faster than HBO can become us." Tom, you're very much into cutting the cord. Is it easier for Netflix to become HBO than the other way around?
No, it's not. Well, yes and no. It's harder for Netflix to start from scratch and start acquiring really hot quality programs that they know are going to work. HBO has built this business over decades. So it's a lot easier technically for HBO to say HBO Go now available, for $8 a month to people. They could do that. Business-wise, Netflix has the easier road, though. Netflix's business model allows it to put in new programming and take a lot of risks that maybe HBO couldn't. HBO's business model that's tied to the cable companies providing sort of a subsidy through free advertising makes it harder for them to switch. So I think it's the ball's in HBO's court, but they seem to be a little cautious about grabbing it. So that's Netflix's chance, and that's the race I think Netflix is feeling, is they have to get there before HBO finally can make that business model work.
Julio, what do you think? Do you think Netflix, because they are a younger company, they're more nimble to do these things, that they are going to become HBO before HBO goes ahead and puts their things online?
Well, as a big HBO Go user, I can certainly see that. I can see them over time sort of beefing up their original content. And I'm quite frankly very excited about that, because I'm desperate to cut the cord, to cancel my cable. My wife is standing in the way, and this is one of the things that makes my argument a little stronger. So I anticipate winning this battle eventually, and this is one step in the way, along the way.
Sarah, do you think people are going to accept Netflix as a television channel effectively? I mean, for the longest time, it's just a stream. It was a DVD service. Then it's a streaming service that had some pretty interesting movies, maybe not the best catalog for quality, but to have original programming, are people going to accept that as an HBO alternative?
Yeah, if the programming is of HBO quality. I mean, the reason that, you know, I whine and moan so much about HBO Go, you know, not being some sort of a standalone service that I can pay $10 a month for, is because I love HBO. You know, I can't not watch Game of Thrones. I've got to figure something out. So that's what Netflix needs. And HBO is nothing without these quality award-winning programs. Not all of them, but, you know, a large number over a period of years. So, yeah, Netflix is poised to absolutely turn into the next HBO, you know, from startup to behemoth. But they need these shows that people cannot live without.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious about how, with the release window, where they just throw out the entire season at once, if that's going to influence the way that the television series are received. Because HBO, you'd watch this show from week to week. You had time to talk about it. People would catch up. You had word of mouth. I'm just not really sure how that's going to work out for them long term. But I do think Netflix and Amazon, a bunch of these companies, have the chance to get more content in there and become a real viable threat to HBO. Because I don't think HBO is going to move fast enough, because the bundled cable deals, as they are just far too lucrative for them to move until they are forced to. And I don't think HBO is going to do that anytime soon.
Yeah, something we talk about on Frame Rate quite a lot. Something that they talk about on Windows Weekly quite a lot is Office 2013. In fact, we talked about it yesterday, and we asked the question, is Office 2013 compelling enough to make somebody turn away from, say, Dropbox and Google Docs and use it? Steve Ballmer has an answer, right, Sarah?
Yeah, he was speaking to Bloomberg Businessweek and has some choice quotes, as he always does. They asked him about Office 13 and, you know, and making a product that's modern enough for something that, you know, 1 billion people are already using. They got a lot of Office users, and compared it to something like Dropbox. And Palmer said, 100 million, that's how many users Dropbox has. Sounds like a pretty small number to me. We've got a lot more Office users. And actually, if you want to go to the cloud, we have Hotmail, we have SkyDrive users. He says, I'm not beating on Dropbox. They're a fine little startup, and that's great. Which is, yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, Dropbox is obviously a very quickly growing company. Don't know if I'd call them a fine little startup with 100 million users, but there you go. The, you know, Office really does have 1 billion users, so I kind of see his point there. He says he expects the 1 billion number to grow, though. This is not some sort of dwindling user base that are going to find their way over to Google Docs and leave. He says it's all about economic development. You got more and more people who are entering the class of information workers, knowledge workers, more and more students that are getting more and more education. He says they're all going to come to Office, basically. We're going to, you know, we're at 1 billion now and we're going to keep growing. Bloomberg had said, well, you know, what about a company like Yammer? I mean, you acquired Yammer. They have about 6 million users. And if you compare that to something like Dropbox with 100 million users, I mean, if Dropbox is a little startup, then what's Yammer or what was it? And he says this is, you know, Yammer is something that's much more used by businesses. And that's important to Microsoft. Those are the kinds of, you know, Skype and Yammer, these acquisitions work for Office, and they're tightly integrated with Office because they help the people who are already using Office. So he's kind of saying, you know, Dropbox is not really a competitor to us. That's more a consumer thing, and they're doing fine. We have much more of an entire suite of offerings. The Verge notes, well, you know, Ballmer has poo-pooed lots of things in the past. You know, he said Chrome OS wasn't any good. He laughed at the iPhone. He said that, you know, you had to be a computer scientist to use Android. But then again, Microsoft is being smart. They've made some really smart acquisitions. So it's not as if he's just saying crazy stuff. That's kind of how I see this. I think he's, you know, he's got to be bullish on their future and not pay too much attention to the kinds of competitors who have free services. Well, he has to pay attention to them, but believe in the product that they're going to make people buy. Also, for anybody who's interested in when Office is coming to the iPad, which is rumored to be happening in March, those were previous rumors at the end of last year. He says, I have nothing to say on that topic. We're very happy with our product. We're happy with what we're putting into the market, and it makes sense on devices like the Mac or the PC. So he didn't say anything about it. He pretty much just said no comment. Do any of these quotes seem off track to any of you? Julio, I'll start with you. Is this sort of just Ballmer being Ballmer?
Well, he's had a lot of bluster in the past. In this case, he's making a very good point in a not very classy way. I mean, he's belittling Dropbox unnecessarily. He doesn't need to do that because his point that the users will come to Dropbox competitor SkyDrive is exactly right. Like I just fired up a Windows 8 laptop the other day, and SkyDrive was built right in there, and it was very easy for me to use it for photo sharing. And so SkyDrive is great. The way it's integrated into Windows 8 is great. It's going to do fine. So will Dropbox, for that matter. So will Google Drive. I like Google Drive because it's integrated with Google Docs, which is what I use. All of these services have a place that I think they will all do well, and I think Ballmer needs to quit being an ass.
I think that's a lot of people's opinion right there. And I think you're right, Julio, is that SkyDrive is in a whole different position as far as acquiring its audience from where Dropbox is. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, RingCentral. When we built the studio, we chose to do as much as we could through the cloud, store documents, hold meetings. We didn't want a big old expensive PBX system in the basement. Probably a bunch of you are like, what is PBX? What is that? You don't want to know. Russell, our IT guy, said, don't mess with that stuff. Get a cloud-based phone system, and we love it. RingCentral has zero startup costs, none of that hardware to install or maintain in the basement, none of that PBX stuff. Allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. Our producers can get voicemail in their email. We can even get all our fax messages right on our smartphones. And RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user. And you can start it right now. Go do it. 30-day risk-free trial and a special offer for our listeners when you buy one desk phone. Get a second one free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com. Promo code TWIT. And we thank RingCentral for their support of Tech News Today. As Microsoft has a storage problem of a different nature regarding the Surface Pro. We heard a little bit about that in the news feed.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer hasn't said anything about this just yet, but it was a Microsoft spokesperson talking to The Verge saying that the install for Windows 8 Pro on its Surface devices are going to take up 41 gigabytes in total, which a lot of people got pretty frustrated with because the entry model is 64 gigabytes, giving you only 23 gigabytes free out of the box. Like I said before, all that space is going towards pre-installed apps, Windows 8 itself, and a recovery partition. Although Microsoft spokesperson did say that users have the option to free up space by creating a backup bootable USB and then deleting the recovery partition. So if you want, you can muck around with this.
Do we know how much that would free up?
I'm not really sure on that one. I want to say it's like 8 gigabytes, but I'm not positive on that. Julio, do you think this is a big deal when the Surface Pro has expansion options? Or does this show like the desktop OS on a tablet is a really bad idea?
Well, this is a little bit of a jaw dropper. I wish the storage space was a little more generous. But it seems to me that a lot of people who buy this device will use it very much like people use an iPad or a Chromebook. To a very large extent, it will be a cloud-based device, a lot of web stuff. If I'll be honest with you, if I bought this device, the way I would use it, it would be very cloud centric, and storage wouldn't be very much of an issue for me. So it's a problem, but I don't think it's as big a problem as some people believe.
So there are lots of devices have less than the actual stated storage on it. So if you have an iPad, obviously if it says 64 gigabytes, you're not going to get fully 64 gigabytes. Same thing with laptops. Is this number, when you're eating up more than half of the stated gigabytes, is that where you have to decide not to call it 64 gigabytes?
Yeah, I think it's totally ridiculous. Yes, my iPad does not actually have 64 gigabytes because I have an OS to run and some other stuff. But 128 gigabyte model of a Surface Pro has 83 free gigabytes because 41 gigabytes are taken up by a recovery partition. And Microsoft says, well, if you don't want that, then you can get a lot of free stuff. Create a backup bootable. No. I think that I think this is certainly something that a lot of our viewers and listeners would say, yeah, I could do that. But is that really a good solution out of the gate? I think it's weird. I think it's quite honestly for anybody. And we've been having this discussion on various shows this week because of that 128 gigabyte iPad version. Some people really want onboard storage. So, you know, the cloud is big and everything, but they're very interested in storing things on their tablets. So for those people, I would be fairly offended by this.
Tom, some people in the chat room have seen in comments on these blog posts are saying, look, this is a full-fledged PC. It's not a tablet. It's not fair to compare that kind of data when it comes to gigabyte storage. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that is a fair point to say this is a little different. But Microsoft wants you to compare it to other tablets. They want you to say, oh, this is a more fully functional machine than a tablet. So if you're going to ask for that comparison, you're going to get that comparison to say, wait a minute, I don't get as much storage here. And Julio's point's well taken. We are doing more things in the cloud. Microsoft wants you to do more things in the cloud. That's why they have SkyDrive. That's why they have Office.com. But why is Apple moving into a 128 gigabyte tablet as well? Because there are also applications, things like CAD, things like some imaging applications, or people who just want to have a lot of videos at the ready when they're on the plane without Wi-Fi, who want that full storage. So I feel like Microsoft could do more to limit that footprint on the Surface Pro. It makes me wonder. You know, if I'm getting the lower capacity Surface Pro, how much is left for me there? I mean, that's not very encouraging. But at the same point, I don't think this is a death blow for the Surface Pro. Do you?
I don't think it's a death blow by any means, especially since there is an expansion port for micro SD. So if you wanted to bump up the storage, you could do that. Also, there's a full-fledged USB port there. So if you wanted to attach it to an external device, you could do that. Although I do find those to be a bit of a clunkier solution than the built-in storage, although micro SD is tiny.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Amazon. We heard the confusing earnings report, Q4 revenue at $21.27 billion, up 22% year over year. Operating income, $405 million, up 56%, earnings per share of 21 cents. Analysts expected a little more revenue, $22.3 billion, and a lot more earnings per share, 29 cents. Amazon also says they expect Q1 sales growth to be between 14 and 26%, so not as aggressive. And earnings could be anywhere from $65 million to a loss of $285 million. They don't give numbers at Amazon in numbers of sales, but they did say ebooks sales grew 70% while paper books grew 5%. That's the lowest paper book growth in Amazon in its history. Sales of e-readers itself, like the Kindle, are falling 28 to 36% off 2011 peak. That's not just for Amazon. That's for the entire marketplace. Ebooks, the electronic books, are actually soaring. So Amazon's strategy of selling ebooks that can be read on an iPad and Android is paying off because they're making money off that, even if e-readers aren't selling as big. Although Amazon says their e-readers are selling just fine. They cited dramatic progress in their Amazon Prime service, their other non-ebook media sales. But why the light revenue? Well, Amazon CFO Tom Szkutak said consumer electronics didn't sell as well. Things like MP3 players, et cetera. You know, he said MP3 players, not a big surprise. I don't think they expected to sell those a lot, but consumer electronics in general was light for Amazon. As one of the big four, everybody always talks about Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon as the big four in tech these days. They have a history of spending a lot of their money. So they don't always have profit, but they usually have great sales. And the marketplace seems to agree. They've supported the stock price out of this earnings report. But Sarah, where does Amazon go from here? What is the direction for them?
Well, I mean, ebook sales are on the rise, dramatic rise, right? So I'm sure Amazon hopes that that number will continue to grow. And paper books falling that's just not a surprise. I mean, we have to assume that's a trend that isn't going to reverse itself. So Amazon is in such a weird position because, yeah, okay, so sales of e-readers are falling. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, you get an e-reader and you don't necessarily need to get another one just because a thinner, lighter one comes out. I mean, e-readers can sort of stand the test of time for a few years. So that might just be the market kind of catching up with the offering. But does Amazon really care? If Amazon is selling a crap ton of ebooks and people continue to read and continue to understand that that's a viable way to read and they continue to make sales that way, I don't know how much they care about certain parts of their business sagging or not looking so good. I think the sales growth that varies wildly between a profit and quite a negative number is odd, but the market doesn't seem to care so much. It seems like investors believe that Amazon's got it all figured out.
Yeah, it's a different reaction than Apple's earnings, and for reasons of the margin. Sure. The margin is better for Amazon than it was for Apple. Julio, where do you think Amazon fits in this continuing story?
Well, Amazon historically has emphasized investing in itself, investing in its infrastructure, investing in its organization to grow, expand. With the somewhat unstated promise to investors that relax, you know, someday this will be worth it. Someday you will be rewarded. I'm not sure about that personally, but I found a comment by a business analyst. I can't remember who it was who wrote, yeah, that's true. But at this point, those eventual rewards better be damn good at this point because this story is starting to wear a little thin.
Ayaz, do you agree, or is Amazon on borrowed time here?
I don't think they're on borrowed time at all, actually. I think with their Kindle Fire HD and their Kindle line of devices, what Amazon has done is they've given you more options to have more devices that you can buy things, and they can collect data on you in a much better way than they could previously. So when it comes to the Fire HD, that comes with ad support, you'll see all kinds of, hey, why didn't you buy this or buy that? And seeing these special offers all the time, I'm thinking people are more likely to click that, which is going to increase sales throughout the board, because they don't just need to give you suggestions on videos and downloadable content. It could go as far as something like a DVD or maybe a mug or something else that you could think of that could be sold at Amazon, because they sell everything. So I think in their long term, because they've set up such a good structure for very low cost and very high quality devices that are getting in the hands of people, attached to a credit card number, I think they're going to be doing just fine.
Now, one of the things that it's good to do every once in a while is check in on one of these hot companies we've reported on before and see if they're still hot. We've got a round of funding coming to Nest, the thermostat maker. How are they doing, Sarah?
Very well. Yeah. So this was the little startup that wanted to sell people a $250 smart thermostat you install in your home, and it learns your behavior and what you like the temperature to be and when you come and go, and uses algorithms to basically let you use energy more efficiently in a smarter way. And the company has closed a round of $80 million. And GigaOm actually says the funding is probably going to help the company expand beyond a thermostat. I mean, I've always thought this thing looks really, really cool. But, you know, I live in a rental and it's like, well, thermostat, you know, eh. But if it was also controlling my lighting, you know, a home alarm system, that sort of thing, that could be a lot more attractive to me. So that's where some of this money could go to expanding. But also, there are a lot more people buying Nest units than I was aware of. The company says it's now shipping 40,000 to 50,000 of these thermostats per month. And if growth continues at the rate that it is at now, Nest could reach a shipment rate of 1 million thermostats per year by this summer. Now, that is shipments. That's not sales. But if you assume the numbers aren't too totally different from each other, that's really impressive for something that's, again, $250. It's a little bit of, you know, it's a special thing that not everyone's going to invest in from their home, especially if they're not going to be, you know, in a house for a long time. The company is also enjoying a lot of growth in Europe, so it's not just the U.S. And the thermostats are available in a lot of different places. You got them at Lowe's. You got them at Best Buy. You can get them through the Apple Store online. And they've struck some partnerships with utilities. Service provider Reliant is one of them. I'm impressed. What I think when I see, a round of funding is, you know, a lot of that is we could guess where all that money is going to go all day. But I really love the idea that Nest has built a business, a successful business, in a short period of time on a really great product that the people who have Nest thermostats, I've never had anyone say, eh, it's kind of a piece of junk. They all say, it's great. You have to do a little bit of investment. There's a little bit of, you know, you got to get the whole thing set up in your house. But once they have that proven and they know it can sell, to add more features into, you know, a smart automated home is really exciting to me. I mean, either the price could go up a little bit, but I want to see, you know, me being able to control my lighting remotely and that sort of thing for $250. I like this. I think Nest is really proving itself. Tom, you agree? Do you have a Nest?
I don't, no. And that's what's impressive to me is you have to overcome a lot of barriers. If you're a homeowner, you have to be willing to either install the thing or hire someone to come install it. It's not like getting an MP3 player. You pick it up and start using it. And if you're a renter, you got to talk to your landlord and say, hey, is it all right if I swap out this thermostat, you know, or maybe you just do it on the sly and hope you don't get caught. But it's not an easy thing to do for most people. And yet it's got great pickup. I'm impressed as well. How do the rest of you guys feel?
I definitely think it is an easy thing to do because switching out a home thermostat's not that difficult, but I think it's really hard.
Yeah, okay, says the host of Know How.
Well, yes, because it's like two wires. But anyway, my point was it's really hard to get people excited about home automation things because they usually are very difficult to work with. Installation isn't the problem. It's the actual operation of these things. And Nest somehow made it exciting to want a thermostat. I mean, Honeywell's been wanting this forever, and they sued Nest over patents about this. So I was just quite impressed that anybody got anybody excited about thermostats. When's the last time that happened?
Exactly. Julio, what's your experience with the Nest? Do you see some big growth potential for the company?
Well, I'll say several things about the Nest. I've done some reporting on it for the Pioneer Press. I've interviewed Tony Fadell, the founder, and I've talked to a lot of Nest users. And what really impresses me about the Nest, which is something I don't see to this degree with other tech products, is just a lot of enthusiasm. The users are just very, very enthusiastic about the device. They love it. They're willing to overcome the difficulty of self-installation. A buddy of mine, he's in a rental, but he said, I'm getting a Nest. I want a Nest, and talked to his landlord into making the switch. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for this product. And one of the things that Nest has told me and other people have told me in the course of my tech reporting is this is only the beginning. There's this whole coming wave of Internet of Things kind of technology that entrepreneurs are popularizing, that companies like Comcast are popularizing with their home automation. And the key is to make this technology sexy and easier to use and easier to understand. And Nest has told me that this is only the beginning. They're doing thermostats now, but they're going to get into other stuff later. And I'm very, very excited about that.
All right, let's finish up with a look at the randomizer. We look at the randomizer and see what it spits out. Oh, what a surprise. It's Rio de Janeiro embedding QR codes into the sidewalk. In fact, the first of these is at a big rock called the Arpoador at the end of Ipanema Beach. They plan to put in 30 of these things. They're worked into the tiles of the sidewalk, similar to the way you might see around Rio fish or other emblems, but you can use this. It's a real working QR code, and they'll give you information about where you are and maybe some history and factoids. Pretty cool, actually. I love the idea because it's sort of seamlessly worked into the feel of the place.
The other thing is if nobody ends up using this, it's not that hideous of a thing. It just looks like a black and white pattern. So if QR codes go the way of, I don't know, QCAT, maybe it'll just be look at this very odd remnant.
I'm leaving it up extra long so everybody can scan it. Okay. All right.
Now you too can pretend you're in Rio de Janeiro.
I feel like QR codes are... This is a really cool idea, but they're just so ugly, you know? Every time I see a QR code, I'm like, just wish it looked
splotch,
like something else.
Splotch.
Yeah.
This will be good for the Olympics, though, right? Have these around town for the tourists?
I guess so.
Go ahead.
I wrote a story a little while ago about QR codes being put on tombstones so that you can find out who is buried there. I thought that was kind of interesting.
If you're touring a cemetery, you can get more information on the deceased.
Yeah, only so much actually fits on the headstone. That makes sense.
Yeah, and there's another interesting trend in QR codes. There are two rival Minnesota companies that are doing something very interesting. They've set up a system where you can hang a little QR code on your keychain or put it in your wallet. You know, it can be a sticker or it can be a tag. And you attach that to your valuable objects. And if those objects get get lost, you know, if you drop them in a sidewalk somewhere, somebody can pick them up. And if they're tech savvy enough, when they scan that QR code, they're given instructions on how to return the object to its owner. So I find that fascinating.
Pretty cool stuff. All right, got a couple things to check in the calendar.
That's right. The Crunchies Awards are tomorrow night in San Francisco. That's where startups compete to be the best at a variety of things. So we'll have a report, I guess, Friday. And also Macworld/iWorld. It's not just called Macworld anymore. Macworld iWorld starts tomorrow, runs through February 2nd. So it's a little bit part trade show, part speaking, part user presentations and app development. It's a lot of fun down at Moscone in San Francisco as well.
Got to give kudos to the Macworld folks for being able to keep this thing popular and relevant and serve the user base even after Apple pulled out. It's pretty impressive what they've been able to do.
I think it depends on who you ask whether it's still popular and relevant. I pull for Macworld. I think sure. It's great to have a lot of, you know, Apple enthusiasts in one place and a lot of people still do enjoy it.
I guess I was trying nicely to say I expected it to die a lot sooner than this. So let's look at what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail with an idea for Barnes & Noble. Listen up, Barnes & Noble.
Hi, TNT crew. Thanks as always for a great show. I was listening to episode 678 yesterday, and you were talking about how Barnes & Noble can survive. If I had any decision-making power there, I would stick all of my stores near or in airports. It's the only place that I can think of where I personally would still be tempted to buy a book or an e-reader is if I was getting on an airplane where I knew I'd have to put my laptop or my tablet down for a while and I'd need something to do. I don't think it's a permanent fix, but I think it's a temporary fix, and I think it's better than a lot of the things that I've been trying lately. Have a great day, and thanks again. Bye.
It's really smart.
Hudson Group owns most of the bookstores that you see in the airports around the United States. And I do see like Best Buy vending machines with e-readers and stuff. I wonder why Barnes & Noble isn't more present in airports.
Maybe Barnes & Noble kiosks that print books on demand might be the way to go.
That's actually not a bad idea either.
We got
all right. Yeah, take that email.
Sure. We got an email from Jim in Fort Worth, Texas. He goes, "Hi, I work in a big box store, and here's what I've seen. Chromebooks are being seen as Nexus 7s with keyboards. We couldn't keep the tablets in stock over Christmas and have yet to recover. Consumers have seen what can be done on their Android phones and are applying the lessons. 2, more than a few of us are actively discouraged customers from buying the Kindle or Nook in favor of a generic Android tablet. Google or Amazon isn't going anywhere, but you could have said the same for Borders a decade ago. Wouldn't bet on Barnes & Noble to be around in half that time. And point number 3, Office 365 works on select mobile devices, not Android and not iOS. Even accessing SkyDrive is a bit wonky. You can view content, but you'll need a third-party application to download the doc, edit it, and upload it back. But if you need macros in Excel or the squadron of flying bullet points in PowerPoint, there's Microsoft Office."
All right, thanks for the insight and good stuff there. And thank you, Julio Ojeda Zapata, for joining us. Let folks know where they can find your work, not only on the St. Paul Pioneer Press, but you've got books you've written that are great, all kinds of stuff out there.
Yeah, if you go to ojezap.com, that's ojezap.com. That's kind of my home base, and you can see everything I'm up to right there.
All right, and you can also submit stories for us to consider for the show at our subreddit. We look at it every day. Definitely take the number of votes into consideration when we're deciding what to talk about. It's technewstoday.reddit.com. Get in there and join the 11,000 or so members of the subreddit, and thank all of them, and especially the moderators who keep it running really well. It's really helpful in putting the show together. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260. TNT Show. We will be back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young, Gumshoes. We'll see you then.